Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 65. And we are live tonight, as always, on DLive, but also on RadioAlbion.com. Now, Radio Albion is run by my friend Sven Longshanks. He does some fantastic work, and it's full, absolutely jam-packed full of great nationalist shows, restreams, original material, music, opinions, ideas, all sorts. His work is absolutely top-notch. He is a tireless advocate for our cause. So if you want a lot more nationalism in your life, and who doesn't, a great place to get it is RadioAlbion.com. He's also a guy that helps set up our conferences and has been instrumental in ensuring that the PA conferences are such a success. So please do support RadioAlbion.com, as well as this platform, DLive. We are no longer streaming on YouTube for obvious reasons, and that means sometimes people say to me, Mark, where on earth are the replays? Well, the replays, my friends, are on BitChute. Now, I'm a BitChute exclusive content creator now because I can speak freely there, I can speak my mind, and I'm enthusiastic about producing content again. It's a bit of a drag when you're constantly producing content that is being censored by anti-whites. But when you can produce content and speak your mind, it makes you enthusiastic about producing that content. So I'm on BitChute and I'm enthusiastic about producing content on there. And this week I'll be doing a video about the Conservatives, their lies about immigration, and how certain CivNats push those lies and wish to embrace this false salvation for our people. Now, my last video is also exclusive to BitChute, and that was about Trigonometry, who are a set of vile anti-white gatekeepers who push individualism on the people of the West. And by people of the West, I mean those of European descent, as in us, because one of them is of a certain tribe, and although he likes in-group preference for his people, not so much for ours. So feel free to check that out after the show, and that is on BitChute. Now, if you want to contribute to this show, you can contribute via Entropy. Entropy is the best way to contribute, and the link to the Entropy is on my Telegram, it is on my Twitter, and I'm popping it in the chat now. So there it is in the chat. You can hop on over to Entropy. Now, if you make a super chat via Entropy, we read out live all super chats. All super chats are read out live, and the super chats that are read out live are asked to the relevant member of the panel, or to the whole panel if it's a question for everyone. So please use Entropy. There's also a way to ask non-paid questions through Entropy too. Now, the non-paid questions are voted upon. The best questions rise up. The worst questions sink down. And we ask the best questions every week as well. So all super chats are read out, and the three or four best questions every week are read out and asked to people on the panel. Now, if you would like to contribute in other ways, there is always Bitcoin. You can get my Bitcoin address by emailing me at mark@forwardwesternman.com or looking it up. It's on my BitChute, and it's also on my YouTube and a few other places. Or you can contribute via bank transfer and other means if, again, you email me at mark@forwardwesternman.com. Now, if you are emailing me, you can email me with problems, concerns, ideas. I'm always available. And again, that email is mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, we have a couple of tiny bits of news to get into before we move on swiftly to our excellent special guest. And I'm really, really looking forward to speaking to him. I have a lot to say to this guy. But before we get to that, Laura Towler, our deputy leader, the lovely Laura, she is live tomorrow night on, I believe it's YouTube, at 9 p.m. That's a bold move. Debating a guy called Ricky Doolan. Well, Ricky Doolan, he runs a group called British Lives Matter, and he believes that the only reason black people are not embracing the British flag and aren't coming together with us to defend Britain is because of nasty people like me and Laura. And I'm not going to go in too hard on this fella. I'm going to leave that to Laura because she is more than capable. But I'll be tweeting this out tomorrow, and I hope you will be all there in the chat to support Laura and to cheer her on. Not that she needs it, but it's always great to have you there. I'll be there in the chat, and I'm sure it's going to be a very, very good debate. And when I say I'm sure it's going to be a good debate, I mean, I'm absolutely positive that Laura is going to turn him over and trounce him in the style that she is known for doing. And finally, before we move into the rest of the show, don't forget that this weekend, Sunday the 9th of August, is Indigenous Peoples Day. So that means we're going out and making it White Lives Matter Day. We'll be putting up banners, posters, publicity material all over Britain with the simple slogan, White Lives Matter. You can download the material on the Patriotic Alternative website. This is going to be a huge, huge day of activity. We're really looking forward to it. Once you've taken part in this, post anything you've done to Twitter and just tweet us in, put us in the put us in the tweet, tag us in it so we know you've done it, or email us or send us a message on Twitter, and we will make sure that these pictures go viral. They'll be all over the internet, all over our Facebook, all over our Twitter. We are going to turn Indigenous Peoples Day into White Lives Matter Day. That is this weekend, and there are activities happening all over the country. And if you can't get to one of the activities that's happening, you can do something else. You can simply print off a poster or a leaflet and put it somewhere in your locality and take a picture of it. So please get involved. This is a national day of action, and you can play a part in this. And hopefully we can force the media into talking about the importance of anti-white racism and the fact that we're becoming a minority in our ancestral homelands. So that is the intro. Sorry it's a bit longer than usual, but I really wanted to talk a lot about Laura and this debate because we should all be there to support her. But before we go on to our wonderful special guest, Jason, what have you been up to this week, my friend, and who is on tap?
I've been very close to a nuclear power plant, and that's why the shirt is so loud. But aside from that, tomorrow we have on tap at noon p.m., so that's not midnight, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Golden One will be with me and Mr. George, so please be sure not to miss that. It'll be on one of the nine or so platforms that we are on. And please do follow one of our colleagues and dear friends, Liv Hyde, over at whitedate.net. It is a great pleasure here to be with Chris. Looking forward to listening to all of the gaming conversations. And I have to say that I thoroughly enjoyed where Chris came unglued about all of the anti-whiteism and in these games. I've been waiting for so long for that to actually happen. For years, I've been saying, when is somebody going to finally lose it who plays these games and just tell it like it is to the anti-whites? But I'm eager to get started, so I'll pass it back, good brother.
Thank you. Well, now I would like to introduce our special guest, who is Chris, the 30-year-old boomer. Now, this guy is incredible. Most of you will know by now, who are regular viewers, that one of my pastimes is gaming. I really enjoy gaming. It's something that I've enjoyed since the age of about 8 years old. And this year I'm 40. So 32 years of gaming is an awful lot of gaming. But I have seen the gaming industry change. It has changed dramatically. And not just in terms of producing bigger games, games with better graphics, more cinematic games, but it's changed in several other ways. The ways games are sold, the price of these games, the way we are charged now to play with our friends, but it's also changed in a very, very insidious and political way. It's changed because the games we loved have now had the same progressive anti-white politics and anti-male politics as well, forced into them by this very same people who have ruined television, who have ruined cinema, who are indoctrinating our children in schools, who are telling white people to be ashamed of themselves in every aspect of their lives. And I've watched this industry going down this path. And I do watch gaming videos when I'm working, when I'm designing, I listen to gaming podcasts. And it's become really difficult because you listen to these things and you listen to the people covering gaming and nobody's saying what we'd be thinking. No one was saying what I was thinking. No one was getting frustrated. You saw the odd person snap. I think JonTron had a little outburst at one point, but these things soon die down. But no one really went for it. No one really articulated my views. I didn't feel like anyone that was producing content about gaming was connecting with me on a political level. And then Chris snapped. And when this guy snapped, and when this guy lost his temper and he said what I was thinking, I was over the moon. Because for so long, I've wanted to get somebody on the show who can talk about this topic. Because whether people want to accept or not, gaming is one of the biggest if not potentially, the biggest medium in the world now. When you look at how many people engage with it, when you look at the monetary value that it's worth, it's absolutely huge. The biggest entertainment franchise in the whole world is a gaming franchise. It's not a film franchise. It's not Star Wars. It's not Star Trek. It's not Disney or Marvel. It's actually Pokemon. And when you look at the money in these games, the amount of people who are playing these games and the insidious message being pushed into them, it is so good that we finally have a man like Chris the Gamer, somebody producing top quality gaming content, who wants to talk about this. And I'm so happy to introduce him now. This is Chris, the man who snapped. Please tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us how you broke free and what finally pushed you over the edge, and also where we can find you and how we can contribute to your amazing work.
Okay, so I have a channel, same name, Chris the 30-year-old boomer. I'm on Twitter as well, Decade Chris. And I do have a DLive account and BitChute as well. I believe they're both Chris the Boomer, Chris 30-year-old Boomer. I forget. I haven't used them a lot, but yeah, you made a good point about there not being a lot of like gaming YouTubers who really speak up about these things. You know, like you mentioned, John Tron, he made some comments and then he retracted it because all these gaming YouTubers, they're worried about losing their sponsorship and losing their cash flow. But my channel, I just do it for fun. So I don't really have an interest in being sponsored by these companies. Like, you know, maybe in the beginning I thought I would, but then I kind of realized that there wasn't a place for me in this kind of like YouTube gaming scene, I guess. So yeah, I just kind of figured might as well say something. There's nothing really to lose, but, I think that shouldn't be the only reason. I think we should maybe form our own like groups doing this sort of thing and not be afraid of that. But, yeah, I've actually been, red-pilled for at least, you know, a little over 6 years. So this isn't like something new for me. It's just, it got to the point where, you know, I saw the false narratives that were being pushed, and in unison, every single company, you know, not just gaming, like every entertainment, sports, music, everything. They all in unison supported BLM. And yeah, I could see right through it. And I just had enough. The video was not really, I didn't intend it to like blow up or anything. It was more just for my small audience to let them know, you know, don't expect any like new gaming content about the new consoles. And yeah, someone shared it on Reddit to get people to attack me. And then they got ratioed pretty quickly within maybe 2 days by right-wing people who said, yeah, this resonates with me. So it's been interesting.
So really what you're saying is, in Dragon Ball Z terms, you've been hiding your power level for quite some time.
Exactly, yes. I've always kind of made subtle dog whistles on my videos, but never completely spoke out about it until that video. But yeah, it's the landscape of gaming has definitely changed, like you said.
Well, the thing with gaming for me, I've been playing since a very young age. In fact, my sort of jumping on point was just before Nintendo released the Nintendo Entertainment System here in Europe. I jumped on when it was actually Game and Watch. And really nicely, I actually have an original mint in box Legend of Zelda Game and Watch. It's even got the battery stickers still unused. And I was really, really into anything Nintendo, even before I jumped into gaming on the NES. And when it came to Christmas, and I asked for an NES a long time before Christmas. And when I turned nine, that was when I finally got it. I just turned nine. It was Christmas. I unwrapped my NES with Mario and Duck Hunt. And things were very, very, I know this is sort of a twee term, but things were very innocent back then. Some games had a story, not very many. If they did have a story, the story was very simple. Everything was about gameplay. It was about enjoying yourself. And there just wasn't any form of agenda. And since games have become more story-led, they have then basically taken these stories and taken these characters and injected all kinds of narratives in them. And with gaming, it seems to have moved much, much quicker and in some ways much, much further than other mediums. But the interesting thing with gaming is gaming was always an escape specifically for the single white male. So white males would be in their bedrooms, they would be gaming, they would be consuming gaming media, they would play with their friends, they would meet people online, and it kind of kept them cocooned away from politics and the real world. And I think it's a very interesting thing that they're pushing these agendas so hard in the sphere of gaming, because this might actually have a negative effect for the system, because you've got lots of young white men sat at home gaming in their little cocoon, happy, oblivious largely to what's going on in the outside world. And all of a sudden, the gaming media, the big AAA game companies have just poked all these white men with a stick and said, you can't have your thing anymore. Has this got the potential to actually red pill people who in some ways were basically cutting themselves off from society and the problems that we face by hiding inside these games?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And from what I experienced after I made the video, a lot of people came to my channel and just said, you know, I love watching your channel now because I have no other gaming YouTubers to interact with who, you know, are the same as me, basically. And it was definitely an escape. And for a lot of us, you know, that's all we had to do to unwind and get away from, you know, hearing the politics. That was definitely something for me. And, you know, some games did have politics, like even in like the PS1 generation, but it wasn't as overt as it is now. It was a slow trickle. And yeah, it's, I would say, I'm not sure exactly how profitable gaming is compared to Hollywood. I assume it's making more money than Hollywood now, but gaming has gone towards the Hollywood style, I would say. And even, you know, the people who run Hollywood. So I saw this coming, and it's turned into the same as how movies are now. Like, you have to be woke if you want a big budget game. And like you said, it is definitely going to wake up a lot of white males. From what I've experienced just personally, I think there's a lot of silent majority out there who are sick of this like I am.
So the thing with gaming as well that makes it very different as a medium, and this actually falls on, I don't usually do questions early on, but I am going to ask one of the questions now. The thing with gaming as a medium is it's something that people can actually do, and they can produce their own games. And that's very interesting, because the way gaming is going, at one point, it was all just AAA big budget publishers, and you bought what was on the shelf in your game store. So you went into sort of Toys R Us, and I would look on the shelves, and I would pick up a game, and I would look at the back of the box, and if it had good artwork and it looked cool, and, you know, maybe if I'd played it in the arcade and it was sort of a cut down home version, I'd decide that's what I wanted. And then I'd tell my mum I wanted to spend my Christmas or birthday money on that particular game, and I'd come home, and you would You'd then play that game for a good couple of months until you'd saved up enough pocket money for another game, because games are expensive. And if you only got a little bit of pocket money, it could be a good few months before you could buy another game, and you'd swap them with your mate. But now, gaming is very different. In some ways bad, but in some ways good. And one of the good ways is there's a lot of independent studios who are now producing much smaller budget games, which are very, very good and are very, very engaging. And these small studios can even have breakout hits. I mean, you've got to remember that PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which for a while was the biggest game in the whole world, sold 30 million plus copies on PC and also made over 3 billion in mobile gaming as well on the mobile version. That was actually made by a small team of independent developers. That wasn't made by an Ubisoft. It wasn't made by an Electronic Arts or an Activision. It was made by a couple of friends in the bedroom, basically. And that's the beauty of gaming. It's not like movies. Like, if you want to make a movie and you want your movie to compete with The Avengers, or if you want your movie to compete with the latest installment of Star Wars, doing something on that scale is almost impossible for the small guy. But doing something like a very, very profitable game like PUBG or many other independently developed games, games like Shovel Knight, that was another game that was huge and was developed by a tiny little team. You can actually do that. So do you think there's also hope in the games industry for people like yourself who've had a lifelong interest in gaming to actually push back and start producing their own games with a better narrative?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's already several games that are pretty close to AAA quality. Games like Kingdom Come Deliverance. You might consider it AA quality, but to me, I don't really care at this point if I have the latest technology and the best animation and, you know, Hollywood talent, if you want to call them talent. But games are to the point where it's good enough for me. And I would take games that looked like, you know, the PS2 generation of games, as long as it wasn't pushing these agendas. I think it's good enough at this point. We don't need these AAA companies anymore. Everything that is non-woke will probably release on PC. They'll have trouble getting on the platforms like Steam, Epic Game Store, things like that. But, you know, maybe there needs to be some sort of game distribution platform that distributes these kind of games. Maybe there is already. I'm not too sure. But, yeah, I think it's totally possible. I would love to get involved with something like that. Not sure where my talents lie. I'm not a programmer, but maybe the creation process would be good.
Well, there is a guy who's actually making a game at the moment, and he's been speaking to me, and he's making a game based on the Golden One. And it's going to be a top-down Zelda-style adventure where you play as the Golden One in a sort of a Skyrim-style Nordic world, where you go around, you adventure, you fight, you level up. And there are people actually working on this. But Jason, you're always a bit quiet on the issue of gaming, and I don't want to leave you out, because I feel this is maybe more my thing than yours. But feel free to chirp in if you have any questions or any happy recollections of gaming as a child or anything you'd like to ask Chris.
Well, actually, I do have some really happy recollections. When gaming before the and perhaps I'll be speaking directly to some other people's experiences who also enjoyed gaming and then had to give gaming up because of the light patterns used for the three-dimensional look and the three-dimensional feel. There are a percentage of the population who we simply cannot see those light patterns, makes us ill. And then there are a little smaller percentage of those individuals actually can be thrown into seizures as a consequence. So I used to play with my siblings, and we had a ball back in the day. And this, of course, there wasn't any anti-whiteism in the games way back in the day. And we had just a glorious time. I would make jokes the whole time, making my siblings laugh, giving the characters vocabulary they didn't already have. Just whatever it was to make it a hell of a good time. So it was, and it was safe. It was something that we could do, and you wouldn't be out doing something that you could get hurt doing. And then, of course, we saw the big transition, with introducing the anti-whiteism, just as we had seen elsewhere. But before then, I had started to get ill. It was like each generation, I would get ill quicker. It would like take an hour, and then I would start feeling sick. And then the next generation, it was like 40 minutes, and I would start getting sick. Until finally, it can seriously take like 3 or 4 minutes max, and I can start getting ill after looking. I'm sure Chris has spoken with people who suffer from the same thing, and I don't know if there's anything that they can do. It ended up benefiting me in a way, because it forced me to, I guess, get out into the real world more, get out into what was actually happening. And I guess with the rest of the folks out there that couldn't game anymore, or who had no talent at gaming. So it was me and everybody who couldn't look at the screen or who had no talent. I do want to point out that we also have a guy, and he's called Western Kind Games at Western Kind on Twitter. And he is in the process of making our first game, and you can find it at whitewellbeing.net. And this first game is a debate simulator that he's putting together. So it's a first run, and I just shared it with Mark. I don't know if he wants to share it up on the screen or not, just so you can see the opening screen. But it's a heck of a lot of fun. He's asking people to run through the simulator and then tweet their scores or gab their scores as screenshots so that they can popularize it, and maybe we can begin to build some nicer things. But I have a question for Chris, but I want to say in this question to Chris here, this is something that I don't know why more of our, I guess maybe I do, we as Western Kind, we always want to be innovators. We want to be creators. We want to be people who are doing, thank you, Mark, who are doing something for the first time. And I think that undermines us very often, because we don't end up being able to produce much as a consequence, because we simply don't have the money to compete, as Mark was just saying, and as Chris was alluding to. We don't have the money to compete with these big companies who have the millions of our dollars, by the way. And they very often also, folks, are getting grants of our tax dollars. They're getting tax breaks of our tax dollars to be able to do their business, to be able to make these games. So I think when it comes to music, I think when it comes to art, when it comes to gaming, I think that we, our game makers, musicians, etc., should have no shame whatsoever. White people are involved in these processes, should have no shame whatsoever grabbing whole cloth what some company has done in a way that you can't be sued, so it's different enough, and then taking the anti-white narrative out of it and putting something white positive into the story, rather than, and therefore having something for our young people out there, our middle-aged folks who are gamers, to play that is not going to be infecting their minds with the anti-whiteism. And so, Chris, can you imagine, and could you speak to this, what would it be like if we could take some of the most popular games that are out there today, change them just a little bit, take most of the code out of it, or that the way it's written now, change just enough so that it is, you can't be sued for the infringement of the ownership of the property, and take out the anti-white narrative element, make the bad guys will no longer be fair-skinned and blue-eyed, but now, you know, they'll be somebody that we can all get behind as hating the bad guy. What do you think that would do for, especially for young gamers? Because aren't we seeing, like yourself, many gamers turn away because it's just, they want to play the game, they do it over and over, and they just put up with the anti-whiteism until finally they explode and they can't take it anymore. Wouldn't it be nice? And what do you think about the possibility of doing such a thing, of just taking these games as is and then tweaking them so that they are not anti-white?
I think if you want that, you should switch over to PC gaming, because people do that with modding. And that's something they're trying to legally stop people from doing. A lot of the shills argue that you don't own the software you buy, and you can't modify it. That's illegal. And there are terms of service with that, but that doesn't hold up, at least in U.S. courts, as far as I know. But yeah, I would say give up console gaming, because that definitely happens. You know, female characters in games, on PC games, they make them more attractive when they make them look ugly for political reasons. That's definitely a thing. I haven't seen any mods that remove anti-white type of thing. Maybe there is, though, but I think that's something that should definitely happen, and that would be a good thing.
Well, there is a question about AAA gaming, and it's from VM. And VM asks, which AA or AAA video games in the last 20 years would you consider to have a nationalist sentiment? Are there any major AAA games? And the last 20 years goes back, that goes quite far back in gaming. I think that probably takes us, what is probably almost to the end of the N64 era. So just about, games were being produced on the N64 in 2000. So yeah, to the end of the N64. So N64, PS2, GameCube, 360, Wii, except PS3, right up to the modern day. Are there any that could be considered to have nationalist sentiment?
I would say military shooters mostly, but even those are more CivNat, if anything. I can't think of anything that's pro-nation state. You know, maybe the old Call of Duty games, certainly not the newer ones. PC games, you know, the real-time strategy ones, or the, you know, things like Crusader Kings. I would say that series is pretty Eurocentric and nationalistic. Yeah, that's there's definitely games out there, but not a lot. It's hard to figure those out. Like I mentioned earlier, Kingdom Come Deliverance is the most recent one I can think of. They did not bow to any of the woke crowd demands. And it's a great game. It's pretty accurate to history from what I know, but I'm not super familiar with that point of history.
Well, interestingly, and it's a bit before then, I don't know if you're into retro gaming as much as I am. I collect a lot of NES, Super Nintendo, N64, GameCube, really anything that's Nintendo pre-Switch, because by the time you get to the Switch, collecting games is virtually impossible because there's so many digital releases and so many what are called limited run games, it's just prohibitive to collect. But before then, on the Super Nintendo, which in Japan was called the Super Famicom, there was actually a number, a series, in fact, of World War II strategy games where you played as the Axis forces invading Eastern Europe. And these games were all based around Operation Barbarossa. And you picked actual real-life German military commanders to actually try to win the war and actually complete Operation Barbarossa. So it's quite funny that that is a completely normal and acceptable thing in Japan, whereas here it would obviously be quite taboo. But I think once you start looking to the East, there's a lot more nationalist sentiment or racial themes in both games and also in cartoons, in movies. I remember when a few people told me to start watching Dragon Ball Z. And when I got into that, I noticed that a huge amount of the show, or a lot of the themes of the show, were discussions of things that, like racial pride, the idea that these characters were the last of their race and the entire honor of their species lay on their shoulders. And this idea that they were striving for greatness to honor their ancestors. And this was, you know, a Japanese comic book translated into sort of a Saturday morning cartoon. But all of these themes were there within that narrative. And when you're watching this, it's so much different to what you see in Western material. Like Western material aimed at children doesn't really anymore talk about anything like that. The most based universe here in the West is probably the Warhammer universe. But in the East, there is a lot of different material that talks about these things. Have you ever noticed this big divide between East and West on that?
Absolutely. Japan and their games were considered the last vestige of non-woke gaming for a while, but what seems to happen is now when they bring these games over, they have the U.S. branches of these companies change the translation to make it more left-leaning. This has happened a lot. For example, the Yakuza series, they've been starting to censor certain parts of that in the Western versions. And I believe Nintendo of America had posted BLM messages on their Twitter, but not Nintendo of Japan. So I feel like the Japanese don't want to push this, but the American branches of these companies are. So, yeah, and you were speaking of anime. I'm not a huge anime watcher. I watch some, but from what my friend tells me, the Attack on Titan series has some nationalistic themes to it. I've only watched a few episodes, so I'm not too sure, but I guess they get close to going full national and then they kind of bring it back, and that kind of disappointed him a bit. I definitely need to check it out at some point, but sounds like you have something to say about it.
The troops in Attack on Titan are all enthusiastic, youthful, brown shirt wearing youngsters who want to defend their nation from these giant marauding morons that eat people and just want to destroy everything in their path. And all of the names of the officers, well, the names of the officers in the first series were all based on famous Axis commanders from the Second World War. So Attack on Titan is very good. Now, I've not watched series 2 or series 3, but the first series of Attack on Titan is one of the best animated series I've ever watched. The amount of twists and turns and surprises in that show, it's so well written. And maybe I didn't watch the second and third series because they sort of scared me a little bit. Because sometimes you watch something and the first series is so incredible and then they carry it on and it kind of ruins it. They kind of then sell it out and they drag it out. And as I say, I really liked, and for anyone who's completely foreign to any of this, Attack on Titan, it's only 20, I think it's 25 episodes, the first series, so it's quite easy to get into. Dragon Ball Z, I think it's about 650 episodes in total for the Z story arc. Very, very good, and there's a lot of payoff when you get to the last few sagas, especially when the tension between the sort of main protagonist and the anti-hero boil over. That is fantastic, but there's a lot of build-up for you to get to there. But I do like Nintendo's stance. Up until recently, Nintendo were editing out anyone who put LGBT, trans material, or anything into stage creator stages or custom clothing or custom items in their games. They didn't want any of it in their games. And they put that forward as being part of their family-friendly policy. Now, Patriotic Alternative have just released their plan, their 25-point plan for a better Britain. It's still a work in progress and we're still tweaking it. But one of the key points is family-friendly policy. And part of that is to prevent the LGBT material being pushed upon children. And that's something that Nintendo did. So I'm pleased that you have noticed that. And I was disappointed when Nintendo of America jumped on the Black Lives Matter bandwagon, because it's the first time they've ever got political. And they always said they would never get involved in politics, which is a little bit disappointing. And it's also something that, for me, has taken a little bit of a shine off the company. Do you guys want to comment on that?
I was just going to say that that's kind of when I decided to make the video, because I was watching all the companies fall in line, and I believe Nintendo was one of the last ones to do it. And I'm like, that's it. There's not a single company left. But at least it was only Nintendo of America, but it's still disappointing.
Do you have anything to add on this, Jason?
Yeah. I'll just say, of course, Nintendo was, back in the day, was one of the gaming consoles that I could actually play for a little while before it became three-dimensional. But I'm curious now, Chris, so it was, Nintendo was, I guess, when you're, like, what, right before your video came out? They started going anti-white?
Nintendo was one of the last ones. I believe Sega as well. It took them a while to finally do it. I'm not sure which branch of Sega had posted the thing, but yeah, that was basically, I was watching this unfold over the several days when every single company started doing it, and then the left would go after the companies who hadn't and continue pressure them. You have to do this or you're racist. And Nintendo was one of the last to fall, I'm pretty sure. And it definitely pissed me off.
Which I think there's a quick lesson here to think about, is that these companies, clearly, these gaming companies who are appealing, their base, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is vastly, where they're not like young Asian men. They are, it's overwhelmingly, certainly in the West, young white guys. Overwhelmingly, that's where their money is coming from. So it tells you very quickly that this is not about money. It has everything to do about with being anti-white. Go ahead and look at some of these old sports stadiums where they used to do motocross in the U.S. and this sort of thing. And you see hundreds of thousands of people showing up to see motorcycles going in an oval on their sides, paying hand over fist to be able to see this. It has never been about money. It has always been about being anti-white. These companies, this is an excuse they give that, we could be harmed economically or something if we don't lockstep with anti-whitism. But it's Bravo Sierra. They absolutely would continue to make. In fact, if any of these companies decided that they wanted to make big profits, they would go ahead and make a white positive game right now, where it's some like white guy takes on the malefactors in the streets and he's able to knock them down by the score. And what white kids would be buying that like there's no tomorrow. They'd be buying every pack on tap of that. And all of the extras that the guy could have, flags and weapons and et cetera, everything he could possibly have. Of course, the weapons would be weapons of words, because that's, we're all about peace and love here. But this is the sort of thing. And I think it's also funny that these companies have all, one after the other, like a set of dominoes, have all come out in favor of this particular anti-white group. And then we have the video leaked of what actually took place with this particular a fentanyl character and suffocating on the drug fentanyl long before he was on the ground. So where do they go now? And what about these companies who have already donated? And Chris, perhaps you know the answer to this. Have you heard about these companies? And if so, which ones have donated millions of dollars to, in particular, this one anti-white group, but any of the others during this recent spate of destroy the West and set it on fire?
Well, I wanted to address the earlier point you made about it's not about money, it's pushing anti-white narratives. That's definitely something I've noticed. They don't care if they lose profits at this point. The industry is huge, and now the ones in power, they can hemorrhage money to get these anti-white messages out. And, you know, when I said I was going to stop paying for these consoles, I was not thinking that I would affect their bottom line. Like, obviously, just me alone. Maybe if everyone did it, yeah. But it doesn't really matter, because they're dead set on losing money. They just want to push the message. I just feel like it's humiliating to give them money when they're pushing things that are against me, my nation, my people. And I'm just had enough. And the second question about who's donating money, I know for sure that Sony pledged they were going to donate millions to Black Lives Matter. I don't remember what the exact amount was or if it was even announced, but they might have even deleted that tweet, but I'm pretty sure someone screenshotted it, but I'm not sure about other companies. I just know Sony was one of the worst offenders during this whole thing.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk to you about as well was obviously a lot of the big changes in gaming came when George Floyd died. Now, he wasn't murdered, and this is very interesting because when this happened, it affected everything. And you started to see the more insidious nature of the gaming industry. Now, when you bought a game back in the day, when I used to go to sort of Toys R Us and say to my mum, right, I'd like to buy Turtles 2 the arcade game. And you'd bring that game home and the game's still sat over there on the shelf in great condition. And that game is still exactly the same as it was the day I bought it from the store. If I was to put that into my Nintendo Entertainment System today, that game would play exactly the same. There's no changes. There's no tweaks. Any bugs in the game are still there. It is preserved as a piece of history. Now, as games became more and more complex, they became a lot harder to bug check, to ensure that everything worked correctly. And we started to move into an era where games could be patched, as it's known, where if there was a problem with a game, it could be altered on the fly at a later date. And this was something that initially the gaming community thought was a very good thing. So if you bought a very complicated game and you put it in and there was a bug that prevented something in that game working correctly, it could be rectified by the developers at a later date. And that seemed like a good idea because there was a very famous game by the not as famous as this developer's other games, but at the time it was a famous game called Space Station Silicon Valley. And it was by the developers who went on to develop Grand Theft Auto series. And famously, in that game, there is a bug that prevents you from collecting the last pieces that you need of the collectibles that let you complete the game 100%. So you can never, ever 100% that game because of a bug in it. And that's obviously really unfortunate because if as a child you've saved up your pocket money, you've spent your £50, you get the game home and you collect 249 pieces and then you find the last one, 250, and it's impossible to collect and it's impossible to ever get that 100%, you're going to be a bit gutted. So the idea of patching a game is good. But unfortunately, this has allowed developers to change games, update games, not just because they've got problems in them, but because they want to push a political message. And games that are always online, games that are now live services, games like Call of Duty Warzone, games like Fortnite, games like FIFA, all of these games carried very blatant anti-white propaganda when the Black Lives Matter movement went into overdrive after the death of George Floyd. Now, at the time, I was actually playing quite a bit of Call of Duty Warzone with some of the guys in PA, and I logged in. There was an update, as there regularly is with these always online games because they're always updating them. That's what you expect. But I logged in, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And there it was in front of me, all of the news sections filled with big black sections with white text saying Black Lives Matter. And it was at that point you could see where this always online ability to patch the games was going. It was going to turn whatever you'd bought or whatever you downloaded in good faith into a way that could pump propaganda into your home, depending whatever was going on in the real world. And all of a sudden, you could see that products that you had either bought or downloaded, as you've said, they're no longer yours because they can be altered at will at any time by the companies. And now we know that George Floyd, he was resisting arrest. He was being extremely aggressive. He was obviously completely off his head. If you look at the way he's behaving in that video, in the body cam footage, the guy looks absolutely insane. If it was your job to bring him in, and it was Derek Chauvin's job to bring him in, you would be your heart would be beating like mad. You're dealing with this absolute madman who's baring his teeth, he's ranting, he's being aggressive. What do you do? And you know why they've taken so long to release the body cam footage, because it proves that Derek Chauvin didn't murder him. His actions may have contributed to his death, but he certainly didn't murder him. He was dealing with the situation in a professional manner, dealing with an aggressive, very angry, very, very abusive, and obviously very high black man who could have caused him severe trouble. And I've seen videos online of police officers giving these people an inch and these guys slipping out a pistol and shooting them three or four times in the stomach and running off. You know, it is life and death on the streets for these people. And that guy was breaking the law, and that's why he was arrested. But what do you think about the, and this is for you as well, Jason, what do you think about this video? What do you think about the Chauvin video? What do you think about the body cam footage? And what do you think about these always online games, which are now being turned into 24/7 propaganda machines, pumping out this white guilt to people who didn't even download the game for that, and it's been pushed into it after release date?
Yeah, and you mentioned before, am I into retro gaming? Absolutely. I love collecting physical games. And exactly what you said, they are preserved exactly how you bought them, which is mostly a good thing. As you said, back then, a game could release broken, but now we can have those little issues fixed. It is definitely where games are more complex and more issues rise up. But at the same time, it's also because the patching of games makes developers a bit more lenient about bug testing, and more bugs slip through. It is probably a lot the complexity of the games. How I feel about that, I want to touch all your points that you made here. I said this last night on a stream. To solve that issue, I feel like they should release the games digitally first, and then as they patch it and get most of the major bugs worked out, then they can release a physical version that's, you know, completed, which they do sometimes. But yeah, and they can also, you know, patch games to change aspects of it for the worse, you know, whether it's removing content that people whined about as being offensive, or just straight up removing content like they did with the Grand Theft Auto games on PC. They removed radio stations because licenses expired. But yeah, a recent example, there's a game called Deadly Premonition 2. And I believe there was an outcry about a depiction of an LGBT character. And now they're going to patch the game to make it less offensive. I'm not super familiar with the game, but I know they're doing things like that. And then you mentioned service-based games. I feel like the push towards service-based gaming is the result of not letting you control your software. If it's service-based, you have to rely on their servers to play the game. You cannot control your own software. They can alter it however they want. And I feel that's anti-consumer because you bought a game specifically what it was advertised to be when it came out, and then they can change it, and you can't really control anymore. I mean, you can delete patches, but sometimes, you know, they'll release patches that change content but also fix bugs. So you either go back to the original version of the game that's really buggy, or you go to the newer version, which removed content. So they just don't want you to have control, and service-based games definitely prevents you from having any control. And as far as the George Floyd video, when I made that rant about being done with the new gaming consoles, I had a feeling that the entire George Floyd story was bull. And there was plenty of signs, you know, the fact they didn't show the entire video, the way the media was reacting to it. But to be fair, I said, let's wait until we know exactly what happened. And I was disgusted that property was being destroyed, people were being attacked and killed over this whole thing when all the facts weren't even out there. And now that the body cam footage is out, you can definitely see that the officers were very professional. They were not agitated. They were not, you know, murderous, anything like that. It seemed like something they didn't expect to happen at all. So that's my thoughts on that.
Those are some great points. And that was one of the directions, brother, that I was thinking as well when it comes to the gaming. I'm interested to see if there will ever be a false advertising lawsuit. There are several in the United States. There are several angles for suing someone who from whom you have purchased something, and it is said to do X, it is said to be Y, and then it ends up not being able to perform the way that those who sold you the product, the proprietors said it would, etc. And naturally, the anti-whites are going to put you over a barrel when it comes to, not a surprise. I mean, if this were 1950s America and the anti-white regime was composed of brilliant white people, unlike the equality hires that they have today, they would have figured that out right away. The games would have been released right away with these glitches in it. And I've predicted, and I guess we're still perhaps waiting to see, or perhaps we're seeing glitch banning. And essentially that is what's taking place with gaming, is they're saying, well, we've promised you this game and you've purchased this game. And oh, boy, there are some great big glitches in it. And we're going to have to fix those. And here comes the patch to fix those glitches and the whole new spectrum of anti-whiteism that's going to be sewn into the game. And yet, sure, you can go back, just like you're saying there, Chris, providing what we're actually imagining would be the case. Sure, you can go back to the version that malfunctions and doesn't work. You already paid for it. You can get your money back. But you can stick with this and go with the anti-whiteism. Sounds exactly like the kind of thing that they would do. I have a question for Chris in just one moment, but the thing I want to say about Floyd really quickly is that this is clearly someone who is a career criminal who has been arrested many times, because he knew, and this is what all police officers know, and they will tell you if you speak with them, and I speak with some who are in the white positive sphere, and they will tell you a career criminal who's been arrested many times knows to be saying the words of surrender, begging for forgiveness the entire time while they are fighting you, while they are resisting you, while they are trying to get away from you. In part, it's born out of the fact that they don't want to go back to jail, but it's also born out of the fact that they know that is the best way to make them look good once they get to court, that they are trying to surrender. I was trying to surrender when I punched the police officer in the face. I was trying to give up when I ran away. I was trying to give up when I grabbed the gun. I was just trying to get away. I was scared for my life. Police officers hear this kind of garbage all the time. And one piece of education that I know Chris is new to the white positive sphere, at least viewing it from where he sits now, you should be aware of, brother, and that is that this case is totally immaterial. Anti-whites destroy Western civilization because that's what anti-whites do. They're looking for a reason anywhere they can. They'll take any reason they can, and they'll use that to move forward. The merits of the case are totally immaterial. In Western civilization that is multiracial now, there's always going to be someone in power who is harming someone that's not in power. And in some cases, that's going to be a white person harming someone who happens to be non-white. At any moment, they can pick any of those cases and say, ah, there's our justification. It proves our anti-white narrative. And now we can destroy you. Now we can demand more from you. Now you have to surrender more. The question that I have to ask for you here is about this evolution of gaming. And I've talked with gamers over the past, probably I've started hearing about it maybe over the past 5 years, maybe a little bit longer, where they noticed that there was a perceptible arc, if you will, or curve in the graph, if you will, of games increasing in the technology, in the crispness of the characters, the movement of the characters, etc., everything that goes into the game making process. And we have seen these gaming companies begin doing what we have seen with all companies across the West, and that is saying we will discriminate against white people, particularly white males, in favor of non-white people and females of any race. And we will bring them in the place of the white male. So now we know that they are hiring on the basis of something other than their excellence or competence to be able to produce these games. And maybe it's been over the past 5 years, I've been hearing gamers, and it seems like it's getting worse now, where they're noticing that the games are getting worse, that the quality is dropping, that they are riding on the momentum of a previous decade of technology. And I've even had, I think it was last year, and maybe you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, maybe a year and a half ago, there was a game that they said, okay, here's the next iteration of this game. It's better. It's everything is more complex than before. And the gamers took the screenshots and short videos of the game and compared it to the game like two iterations ago. And the game two iterations ago looked better. Everything was more realistic. The characters moved more fluidly on the screen. So are you seeing that in the games that you have been playing? And do you have any predictions for if that trend is going, you see that trend continuing or not?
Absolutely. And that's part of the reason why I'm sick of the industry. The real problem is there's a lot of people who blindly accept anything these companies put out, and they blindly accept anti-consumer practices. So, of course, they saw this portion of the gamers as easy to manipulate. And I feel like that's why they're pushing the woke content. I have seen this a lot. You will make a complaint on a forum pointing out something that's downgraded about, you know, a sequel or a remake of a game. And, you know, you can't question anything, basically. And at first it was, you know, just the anti-consumer thing, any glitches or downgrades. But now it's, if you don't accept the anti-white narrative, get out of gaming. You don't belong here. It's not for you anymore. So yeah, it's definitely happening.
Well, I just want to go back to what we were saying about Black Lives Matter. And this is another very interesting thing that we've seen in gaming. One of my friends has just texted me this. He said, Fortnite had a live game town hall about black justice, and they gave out a free skin for anybody, a free sort of outfit in the game, if you went and did sort of the lesson on black justice. Now, that's really, really interesting, because there is this push in the gaming industry now to present people who are a black or of ethnic minority background as the victim, as the ones that are being hurt and disenfranchised, as the good guys. And you're starting to see what you've seen in Hollywood, which is usually that the straight white male who has the most sort of proper and upper class English accent is, of course, the bad guy. Also, German accent is good. It's either English or German
Southern,
accent. Is
Southern
good.
As well.
You've got a really Southern as well, yes. But this is really interesting, because let's have a little bit of a reality check here, because the gaming industry is telling us that blacks are the victims, that they're harmless, that they didn't do nothing wrong. And here's a great example here from the UK. And we all know the crime statistics, but I'll just read this headline from the Daily Mail. This is breaking news today. We've known about it for a while, but the person has just been found guilty. Haunting video shows barmaid Keely Bunker, 20, dancing with a friend hours before he raped and murdered her and hid her body in a stream after she texted pal, "Wes will walk me home. It will be fine." Wesley Street attacked his victim, then returned repeatedly to cover her body where he left it in a stream. He lied about what happened, changing his account four times before trial, but CCTV exposed his lie. The jury took just over 8 hours to convict the former warehouse packer, who was Keeley's childhood friend. Now, this video here shows the murderer and the victim dancing on her 20th birthday. This is a picture of the girl. This is a picture of the rapist and the murderer. And here you can see him prior to his arrest. You can see the girl coming out of the club. You can see him being interviewed by Staffordshire police, where he was handing over his mobile phone and playing the victim, saying, you know, he felt like the police were blaming him. I'm sure he would have played the race card if he could. And you know, just a couple more pictures. This is Keely Bunker. It was her 20th birthday when she was raped and murdered by this man. It's her mother, and the man in question can be seen clearly here. So there is the murderer. There is the victim. Now, we know that this is all too often the case, and especially in America. In America, there's something like 20,000 interracial rapes every year of white women by black men.
30,000.
30,000. And there is less than 10, according to the FBI, every year, rapes that are of black women by white men. And when they say less than 10, it means the number can be anywhere between 0 and 10. But every statistic has sort of a fail-safe or a statistical error of 10 built in. So you can never go beneath 10. There's always the issue of 10 because that takes into account any misreporting. So it could be 0. I should assume it is, in fact, 0. But when all these companies are pushing the Black Lives Matter agenda, when all these companies have little things flashing up on your screen where Fortnite is giving out free in-game clothes if you go and do a lesson on black justice at the Gaines Town Hall, none of them will be talking about the brutal rape and murder of Keely Bunker, a girl who was brought up and told to trust people of color, a girl who was brought up and told that it was safe to go out dancing with him, that she actually believed he was going to look after her. When she was drunk, she put her trust in him. He was the man she chose to walk her home, and she'll never see another birthday. Now, I look at that girl, and she is a beautiful young white girl who is now no longer with us. And to me, she's as much a victim of the multicultural system as she is of Wesley Street. Because if she had been brought up in a world that had told her the truth, if she'd been brought up in a world that had told her the risks associated with being around men like that, maybe she'd still be with us today. But instead, she grew up in a world where we're told to have sympathy for these people, that these people are always the victims, that these people should be trusted, that these are the good guys. And she'll have been told that she was the bad guy. And if anyone had suggested to her, maybe don't walk home with him or be alone with him when you're in these sort of situations, that person would have been the bad guy. And it's amazing, isn't it? The people that could have saved her life, the people that could have given her advice, which would mean she would still be here today, they're the bad guys. But the people who pushed her into his arms, the people that would have told her to trust him, the people that essentially brainwashed her into believing that she was making the right decision, and the right decision led to, well, the right decision led to her death, they're the good guys. And that tells you a lot about the situation we're in. What do you guys think about that story, and how does that relate to the narrative being pushed in gaming today?
So that's one of the reasons I made the video. I felt like, even though people can say, it's just gaming, bro, it's not that important, it's a huge industry with a huge influence over people's minds. And I felt like the gaming companies were complicit in the violence that was happening towards white people during the riots and, you know, before. So stories like the one you pointed out are very common. We know the statistics, and it makes my blood boil, honestly. And it's humiliating to give these companies money who support, you know, BLM. They say it's for equality, but BLM has a different agenda. It's not equality.
Yeah, this is beyond. This is so sickening that we have seen this and have to see this so many times. And Mark knows exactly, speaking right to the point. Those of us who have been in this for a long time, we have this sort of ambivalence. We are furious about the victimization, furious that the victim would make such a stupid decision, and then realizing that the victim is not only a victim of the crime that was committed against her in this case, but a victim of the anti-whites who taught her to live the way that she did, and who taught her that these people, we've seen this and talked about this so many times. Mark will remember the two girls who decided that they were, where were they from? Scandinavia. And they were going to go for a little jaunt, a little backpacking in a country. Yeah. Where they severed their heads from their bodies. And then Mark told this great, sort of narrative about, maybe Mark will mention it again, about
back in the good old days, yeah, of YouTube.
Yes, back in the good old days, about telling the children to go out into the woods or not go out into the woods, and what could happen in the woods. This anti-white morality, this is the thing that we have to just break the shackles of. We have to say things like it is. This is why I say that when you are in front of white children, even if their parents, even if it's their own parents who are saying something anti-white, you have to say as an adult something in love to those children about our people, something that's going to keep them safe, something to let them know that there are adults in this world who are sane. Adults in this world who care about what's going to happen to them in their lives and the decisions that they make. Because the movies, the entertainment is not only the movies and television, et cetera, but as Chris is pointing out, it is the gaming. And there are plenty of our young girls as well, certainly our young men, who are playing these games. And the subconscious mind, we could talk about this and we're forever, but we're not going to today. But the subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between what is real and what is fake. That's why your pulse races when you play the damn video game. That is why you get nervous when you play the video game, because the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between reality and fiction. And it's the subconscious mind that you live your life according to in almost 99% of it. Rarely do you bring the conscious mind to bear. It's how you ride a bicycle without thinking about how to ride it once you've learned. How you drive a car when you finally have learned how to drive a car without giving a single thought to it. In fact, you can have an argument on the phone and still find your ass home in your car in your driveway without a single thought to it. These people are learning a reality of the world that is really just the anti-white narrative, and they're acting in accordance with it. This stunning young woman would have, I guarantee you, not given a single look to 90% or more of the white guys who are living their lives gaming now on gaming systems and games that are polluting their brains. Wouldn't have given them a single look. Wouldn't have interviewed them once for a potential relationship to see, will this person make a good husband or father or mate or provider or protector? Wouldn't have given that a single thought. Because she's learned her whole life by way of entertainment, maybe video games as well, but by way of entertainment and school, et cetera, that white males are punks, they're chumps, they can't do anything in the real world, they're no comparison. But the non-white male, well, he's really in the tenderness of his heart. He's really got your concerns, your welfare at the core of all that he does. He really cares about you. He's the good guy. And if you think any thoughts about that this individual other than that he is angelic and descended from Nirvana to protect you from the evil white man and all these commercials we see that when it's like ADT, all these home security systems, it's always the black police officer that shows up to protect the white woman from the white guy trying to break in the door, kick the door in. And this young woman ends up thinking as a consequence, that's the real world. She's going to put her faith in this anti-white, non-white animal. And then she ends up with the consequences of reality. So do not miss an opportunity. I mean, you could be considerate and lawful when you have an opportunity to say something in front of other people's children, but you let them know. You turn to those children and you say, it's because I love you that I'm willing to say that your parents are jackasses. I hand it back.
Well, thank you. We're going to do the super chats in a second, but I just want to say this. I look at Keely Bunker. She's only 20. And I see her in two different ways now, being a father. I see her as obviously a beautiful young woman that most men would be very attracted to. But I also think that is somebody's daughter. And I think of my daughter and I think, oh my gosh, the kind of world that our children are growing up in. Now, I don't have those kind of worries for my daughter, because I'm going to arm my daughter with the knowledge to prepare her for the world. And that gives me hope that she won't end up in that kind of situation. But I always see when these issues are brought up that people often are very quick to say, oh, well, you know, she brought it upon herself. She shouldn't have been hanging around with him. But when you live in a world where every authority figure, where the government, the role models, the police, social services, your teachers, the talking heads on television, everybody in the movies, people in the games industries are telling you these people are the nice, kind, oppressed, decent people. You need to go and be nice to them. It's safe for you to go to Morocco. It's safe for you to walk back home drunk with this black guy. I can't have any anger for those girls, but I can have an awful lot of anger for the system that fed them with those lies. We have to aim our righteous hate. People are scared of talking about hate. Oh, we don't hate. This is all about love. No, it's not. We do love our people. We do love our people. But it is absolutely right, decent, noble, and correct for us to hate those who are trying to destroy our people. And never forget that. Never, ever forget that it is completely good and righteous to hate at certain points in your life. And our enemies never forget that, because every time Black Lives Matter go out and loot, burn, and attack, they claim they're doing it because they love their community. But they're obviously doing it because they hate those that they believe are oppressing them. And it is absolutely right for us to hate those who are oppressing us. And remember, the left, the media, the government, they never, ever take away the right to hate from anyone else. In fact, they play on that right. They fuel that hatred and they use it to direct these people's anger against us. Never, ever lose the important ability to hate those who want you destroyed. Because if you lose that ability, you are at the mercy of those who want you destroyed. Anyway, we shall move on to some of these super chats. Junta Mominari gave $3. Did you see Dr. Zhao Yongchun striking at the Zionist occupational government's Achilles heel for accusing China of genociding Uyghurs, I think that's how you pronounce it, because of their declining fertility rate, by accusing Western governments of white genocide? Well, thank you for the super chat. And no, I didn't. I did not see this. Did any of you see Dr. Zhao Yongchun striking out about white genocide? I'm going to have to look this up. Thank you very much for
that. I want to see. I know nothing about it, but it sounds interesting. I'll look into it.
No. Well, I am going to too. Syrup gave £5 and thank you very much. And he said, the purpose of the media is to protect paedophiles and start wars for Israel. Very succinct, to the point, and 100% correct. Thank you very much. Dolman gave $10 and said, this is a question for you, Chris. Financial tyranny is the greatest threat to us. As long as they can attack our wealth, we will never grow. Patriot Front did a 4th of July video recently, their best yet. Have you seen it or have you heard of them?
Yeah, I've actually been looking at their videos for a few years. Every time I watch their videos, it's definitely pretty inspiring. I think they got really good optics. So I would definitely say check out their videos. I think they really care about the country's future.
Okay, thank you very much. Junta Mominami gave another $10. Thank you very much. He said, China's fertility rate is declining as a whole, not just the Muslim minority. In 2023, China will be in the top five fastest declining populations in the world. South Korea has the lowest fertility rate in recorded history. With current trends, we'll reach extinction in 50 years plus. Well, thank you very much. I did not know that. I'm going to look into that. But if anyone can turn it around, I should imagine the Chinese can. Junta Mominari gave $10 again. Thank you very much. 10 years from now, if nothing changes, white people will begin fleeing from the US, including to third world countries like Mexico, Brazil, Vietnam, etc. Though they're dangerous countries, their institutions are not openly dedicated to railroading white people for being white. What are your thoughts on this? Well, let's go around the group. We already know people in the pro-white community who already have gone to the Far East or have gone to other countries. I know nationalists who are living in China. I know nationalists who regularly go to Japan and live in Japan. I know nationalists who live in Cambodia and who live in Vietnam. I know people who live in the Philippines who are nationalists. And the reason they've gone to these countries is because when they get there, they're respected and they're treated like heroes. And the society there is completely different to our modern society. In fact, it's much more akin to how our society was maybe 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago, maybe further back. What do you guys think about this? Do you think that people will be leaving the Western world and heading to non-white countries because they'll actually be respected more in certain non-white countries than they will be in white countries?
I can understand why they would do that for the exact reasons you said. I personally would not, because in the end, it wouldn't help my people. But it's, I can see why white men want traditionalism, at least white men like me. And it's appealing, but it's not the correct thing to do, in my opinion.
Well, what a magnificent take that just was. What a healthy, magnificent take. Christ has not been in the white positive sphere. This guy finally just gets fed up with what we would refer to, I think, you know, colloquially as blindsight, tired of the anti-whiteism in the system. And then just has this absolutely healthy take. And it should be an inspiration for us all to know that there is still a lot of healthy integrity, courage, and self-confidence in the white race. They're out there to be found. We just have to find these good people and continue, as we are doing, to bring them to white well-being in the work that we're doing. So this is, I do agree that there are going to be, first of all, I totally agree with Chris. The thing for us to do is to be the heroes that the age calls for. This is an age of heroes. And if you want to write your name into that book and be one of those heroes, then it's going to be up to you whether or not you make those deeds. That pen writes with our blood. It will be crimson on those pages, and it just waits for you to put the pen to the paper page. There will be people, because of the radical individualism. I agree with the person that it was financially gifting. There will be individuals, because of the fanatical individualism, that we have obviously have a genetic predisposition, which has served us well, and we need to get under control so that we can survive this epoch. But because of the push to make us more individualistic in a world of collectives so that we are easily defeated, there are going to be a great many people who end up moving away to other countries around the world to save their own asses, because they're just simply selfish individuals. And they think they're going to be able to escape. I think it's going to be a short-lived endeavor. Certainly in some countries, they're going to be safer for longer, maybe even the rest of their lives. But I don't know about their children's lives. I don't know that these places that are leaving them alone for the moment are going to leave them alone forever. None of these countries around the world, none of them have been as nice to minority groups as Western kind has in the West. They always just look at the Chinese and what they have done to all of their minority. They have sterilized people. I mean, look at what the Japanese have done. Look at what they have done in Central and South American countries. They finally decide, okay, we don't like this minority group anymore. There aren't any protections. No government is going to swing in and say, oh, but what about their feelings? No, they're just going to come in and rape at will and take you all out. So it's just a matter of time. Individualists that flee might find some reprieve for a bit, but certainly their children will not. But I pass it back to Mark.
Well, I thought I'd just have a bit of light relief here. I noticed that in the private chat, Chris had sent me this message. Fortnite players throw tomatoes at in-game anti-racism video. So it does seem that there are some based gamers out there. And here's some outrage. Recently, Fortnite Party Royale played host to a live discussion from the podcast We the People. We the People intended to allow Fortnite players to observe a dialogue on race that could educate players about the real effects of racism in America and hopefully stir personal growth in their audience. Some players, however, use this as an opportunity to throw tomatoes at the video screen. Well, I certainly endorse that tomato throwing. We've got a super chat here from Andre. He gave $18. Thank you very much. And this is a really important message. Chris, I saw your lifting videos. Have you seen Patriot Front? You've already answered that bit. They're a nationalist organ, fairly active. They arrested Thomas Rousseau for a reject poison anti-drug sticker. He'd make a good message for Mark. And before you answer this, I just want to say you are a power lifter as well, because this common misconception with gamers that they're all sort of soy boy, little string-armed wimps who couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag. In fact, there was some fat beer-bellied oaf trolling you on Twitter earlier about why I didn't have powerlifters on the show. And you actually are a powerlifter as well. So say a bit about that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up. I think gamers should definitely find a balance. I feel like gaming is just something you do to unwind, but you should definitely be getting stronger. And yeah, I like what Patriot Front puts out. They got good optics, like I said. But yeah, I'd say the men need to start lifting. Let's be honest. I was a soy boy until maybe 2 years ago, and I started powerlifting. I lost about 75 pounds. I did fall off the wagon a little bit over the past 6 months, but you know, I've bought a bench, a squat cage, and a barbell. But the whole COVID thing makes it tough to find Olympic plates right now, at least at reasonable prices. But I'm definitely going to be getting back to that very soon.
Well, thank you very much for that. And that does put people straight who talk about gamers not being fit. There is a balance. We have to have a balance. I used to be at the gym all the time. Unfortunately, my personal fitness has dipped in terms of strength over the last few months. But that's, again, because I haven't been able to get to the gym. Blunderbuss gave $25 and said, hockey is getting very paused. Could someone do an Wikipedia early life check on NHL commissioner Gary Bettman? Thank you very much, Blunderbuss. Early life check indeed. The Thin Red Line gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, are you familiar with Norm Apollo? He's a psychologist, one of our guys, and a very good speaker. He would make a great guest. I am not familiar with Norm Apollo, but I can certainly look into him. Thank you so much for that. Serena JB gave £3. Thank you very much. And said, I listened to quite a few gaming streams on Twitch. Well, Serena, I didn't know that. That is awesome. It's one of the things that we haven't actually discussed. I know you've been a great supporter of this show, but I didn't know that you were you listen to gaming streams. She listens to them on Twitch and asks, are you on Twitch, Chris?
I am. I tried the platform for a while, but just kind of gave up on it because I had the larger YouTube audience. I would say check out my stream because a lot of people in the chat just discuss these kind of topics, and we just kind of have a chill stream and, you know, connect with people that we want to connect with. And I think people find that refreshing.
Yeah, I've always thought about setting up a Twitch account, but I think I just get banned instantly. And after Dr. Disrespect was banned, the only people I ever watched on Twitch were Shroud and Dr. Disrespect. And since they've disappeared from the platform, I've never really watched anything on there.
I feel like my time is going to be limited on YouTube pretty soon. I feel like it's only a matter of time till I'm banned. I have to switch to DLive and BitChute, which I already have. I did do a stream on DLive, but I have that large audience on YouTube still. So it is hard to switch, but I feel like it's something I'll have to do eventually.
Honestly, it's quite worrying when you've built up a big YouTube channel thinking of switching. But once you have, and once you're producing content in an uncensored manner, it's a huge relief. It's just making that jump. Jacob Patriotic gave $3. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, hi, Mark. Do you have any thoughts on Gary Rakes and the new British Union? Well, thank you for the super chat, my friend. I've known Gary for years. Gary was in the British National Party. He's a really, really lovely guy. I've always got on very well with him. Never had a bad word to say about him. And I don't think he's ever had a bad word to say about me. We're slightly on a different page where we are in politics now. Patriotic Alternative is obviously very different to the new British Union. But saying that, Gary wrote to me the other week and said he'd be supportive of coming along to our events if him and his members would be welcome. I said, we're open to all people as long as they abide by our rules when they come along. And considering I used to work with him regularly in the BNP and used to know him quite well, it's always a pleasure to see old friends. So, you know, best wishes to Gary and best wishes to all the nationalists I used to work with in the BNP. You know, you're all welcome at PA events, and thank you for the super chat. Damien Demento gave £30. Thank you very much. It's a very generous super chat there. He said, hello all. What are your thoughts on the impact of gaming and virtual reality has on the lives of people in countries like Japan, where young men are living their lives in games and even having virtual relationships? Do you think that we as people would be better off if computer games were never invented or even banned? Well, let's go around the group. I'll start by saying, I think that any medium can be a bad thing. Anything can be a bad thing if you do too much of it. I actually used to know a woman who was addicted to jogging, and that sounds ridiculous. She would jog several miles to the gym, spend an hour on the treadmill at the gym, only to jog home, get a shower, put a work clothes in a bag, jog to work, have a shower at work, start work, do a working day before jogging home. And that's not a joke or an over-exaggeration. And I'm into fitness, and one thing I've never let lapse is my cardio, because I always find it's harder to get your cardio back than it is to get your gains back. Cardio is, to me, large muscular bulk is not as essential to me as a good cardiovascular system. I'm not saying it's not important, it is, but good cardio has always been key to my fitness and my happiness. But this woman looked absolutely awful. She was addicted to exercise. Now, I know people who've been addicted to weightlifting. I know people that have been addicted to bodybuilding. I know people who've been addicted to alcohol. And there are many types of addiction in the world today. And some people do get addicted to games. Some people get addicted to movies. Some people get addicted to comic books or reading everything to do with Harry Potter and living in a little Harry Potter cave where they live in a world that's surrounded by Harry Potter. And I think anything can be very bad for you if you do too much of it. And even things that you need to survive can be bad for you if you overindulge. We all need food, but if we eat too much of it, it can destroy your life. And I think that everything is moderation. And I think that the thing that we lack today is we lack good role models, we lack good parental advice, and we lack checks and balances. So today, if you're some 20-something stone mega whale, you know, scooting round Walmart or Tesco's in a mobility cart, buying 3 or 4 cooked chickens, full-fat mayonnaise to pour all over them, and giant bottles of Coke, no one says, look here, fatty, you could maybe do with cutting down on the food and doing a bit of exercise, because that's abuse. In the same way that if you stop somebody and say, hey, mate, maybe you shouldn't be going to bed with your anime pillow and you should play a little less games, get down the gym and get out to see a bird, you're a hater. And I think what we need is balance in people's lives, and we need balance with everything. You need balance with work, play, diet, drinking. All of these things can be good for you in the right quantity. And I think gaming's the same. I've got a large gaming collection, but I don't think anyone could argue how much time I spend fighting for this cause. And, you know, if one day we stand victorious, you know, I might retire a little bit to play a few extra games. But until then, I can moderate my own life, but many people can't. And that's why we need the return of good role models. What do you guys think about gaming becoming an addiction?
Yeah, definitely anything can be an addiction, you know, watching TV, anything. I wanted to mention what you said about cardio. That's definitely something I've fallen off the wagon with. And I gained about 25 pounds since my initial loss. To me, powerlifting motivated me to do the cardio, which I didn't like. And yeah, cardio is very important. When I initially lost the 75 pounds, I was jogging, not the entire time, but off and on, about 8 miles every other day, and I lost the weight fast. But yeah, I think it's good to give people role models rather than beating them down. But sometimes you do have to just tell them the truth that they need to hear. Yeah, so that's all I can think of. What about you?
Well, I absolutely agree with both of you, and particularly the cliche platitude that all things in moderation, anything can become an addiction and can consume too much time. And certainly if we were in charge of our destinies, we would have entertainment companies that would be making television shows and the like that would demonstrate healthy people giving a normal amount of time to whatever it might be, and then getting up and going and giving a normal amount of time so that you remain a productive person rather than this sort of like leech of the capitalist system that just wants to sell you a new thing and keep you stuck. And in fact, if we were in charge of our destiny, we would not allow capitalists, we would not allow people who are making money off the population to harm them in the process of making money. And there are techniques in capitalism and sales that are taken to a really a poisonous point now, taken to the nth degree, where they can indeed, and certainly in gaming, and perhaps the two of you can speak to this, where there's always something that is just within reach, the next level, the next suit of armor, the next weapon is available, the next leveling up is just there. You have to work a little bit longer. And it's this rat pellet reward system that they took, as I understand, from quite a few studies that were done many decades ago about human behavior, animal behavior in general, and how you get an animal and a human being, whether you believe we have a soul or not, is in an animal's body, how you get an animal trapped and enraptured by a particular thing, you get them coming back again and again. We make jokes, and then I'll pass it back. We make jokes all the time about, well, they don't make things like they used to, as though the only reason why that is because the production of products has been moved to other countries around the world. It is in part due to the fact that you have a different type of laborers, you have different type of standards, etc. But planned obsolescence is a demon of capitalism. They want whatever it is that you have to go bad as soon as possible so that you have to buy it again. Back in the day, you bought that furniture or whatever it might have been. You bought the house that was built back in the day has stood for 200 years or whatever. The houses that are built today, within 5 years, they have basements cracking, and it goes from something as big as that to your automobiles, of course, that are immediately breaking down, to your gaming systems that are immediately, the new one is coming out, you see it with the cell phones, everything. If we were in charge of our destiny, we would make it much more difficult and indeed impossible for those who are making money off of our lives to poison us in the way that they have. But I would like to hear both of you speak to that topic.
Well, the thing with gaming, and one thing you got to remember about the addictiveness is, and this is kind of interesting, we can't sort of dominate the whole chat on this night, but let's give it just 5 more minutes. When I got involved in gaming, there was only so long you could handle of gaming. But you have got a point in the way that developers have made games more addictive. Now, I got really into PUBG, and I was playing the mobile version. You can play it through the PC using an emulator, or you can play it off your mobile phone. And I met a group of friends and we started playing PUBG Mobile. I know that Natty actually still plays this. Apparently he's a bit of a demon at this. But they have this thing where they give you rewards every day for signing in and completing things. And it becomes very much, I have to sign in, I have to complete this task, I need to do this, I need to get my points for the day. And there are plenty of things in games that do need regulating. There's gambling, there's loot boxes, there's in-game app purchases, and all of these things do need correct regulation because some of them are very predatory. I don't think gaming is, for most people, something that would be an addictive problem, but it is definitely something that some developers are making worse for people who do have addictive personalities and do have problems with things that become addictive. And I think any developers that are using these predatory practices in their games, the games should carry warnings that those loot boxes, gambling mechanics, and other things are in the game, because they can spoil it for a lot of people. They can cost people a lot of time, a lot of money, relationships, even careers. And there does need to be strict regulation of entertainment industries, whether they be. But same with social media. Look, this isn't just a thing with gaming. I mean, people talk about young men being addicted to gaming. How many middle-aged housewives are addicted to Facebook? Because of the same things. And I think all of these things need strictly regulating as well to ensure that people aren't dragged into this trap. What's your thought on this, Chris? Because we've spoken about these things before privately. So I'm really, give everyone your take on this, my friend, then we'll move on.
Yeah, I'm really grateful that I never had an addictive personality. I've resisted any type of games like that. If any game is, service-based, you know, even MMOs and such, I've never gotten into them. I'm not sure why that is. It's just never appealed to me. It, like, an endless grind and getting addicted to that, I never saw the appeal. I wish other people could do the same. And I agree that that kind of thing should be more regulated. I believe some European country sued for loot boxes, I thought, or something like that. I forget who it was, though. But yeah, I definitely agree that needs to be regulated in some way.
Somebody's just noted in the chat that these streams are addictive. Well, we only do 2 hours a week. Corey 1995 gave £100. Thank you very much. That is a very, very generous donation. It was very gratefully received. Thank you so much. And they said, great to see fellow gamers waking up. Thoughts on Halo Infinite? Excited it's coming to PC. I played lots of Halo 3 multiplayer back in the day. Master Chief, the alpha white male. Well, I'm more of a Nintendo fan, but back in the GameCube era, I'd been a huge fan of GoldenEye, and I'd been a fan of the stealth shooter genre. And when I was playing my GameCube, I was a massive fan of the sort of unofficial follow-ups to GoldenEye and Perfect Dark by a company called Free Radical, and that was the Time Splitters series. And I played Time Splitters 2 and Time Splitters 3, Future Perfect, and I loved them. I played them to death. But one thing I was always jealous of Xbox owners for, and there was only about one thing, was Halo. Because after playing stealth shooters so much, when I booted up Halo and I played Halo for the first time, I remember playing that assault on the beach level. And oh my, that was mind-blowing. I played the first Halo. I enjoyed it very much. I played a bit of ODST. I played a bit of 3. But I haven't played Halo for quite some time. But I think Infinite looks very interesting because they're moving it to a open-world model. And apparently, the whole thing is going to work with real-time dynamic lighting. So everything is going to be one huge day-night cycle, and the world is going to feel like a much more living and breathing and organic world. And I do think Halo is one of the quintessential shooters. If I was to talk about quintessential shooting games, I would straight away, you'd have to say Doom straight away. But once you get out of Doom, for me, and I remember the buzz, I've got my Super Nintendo copy of Doom in this room. I love that. Only ran at about 15 frames a second. Still the best thing ever. Loved it to pieces. But once we'd got past Doom and games that were similar to it, like Duke Nukem, GoldenEye and Perfect Dark ate my life up. But after those shooters sort of subsided, Halo did usher in something really new and fresh before Call of Duty took over. And I think for Halo to take center stage again, I do think it needs freshening up a bit now, and I think Infinite does have the possibility to do that. But as I say, I'm more of a Nintendo gamer and a retro gamer than I am a modern day gamer, so I doubt I'll be playing it myself. What are your thoughts, Chris?
I am kind of the same. I used to like Halo. I think it's a bit overrated, sorry, but I preferred the Bungie Halos. I felt like the series for me ended at Reach. I played a bit of Halo 4. It was okay, but I just kind of lost interest. I won't be buying an Xbox Series X if Halo Infinite comes to PC. I don't know if it is already, but maybe I'll try it. You said GoldenEye. That's definitely one of my favorites as well. And Perfect Dark. Yeah, I'm more of a stealth shooter fan as well. More recent one I've been playing is Metro Exodus, and it's actually quite good. It's more of a stealth shooter, but it does have a more open world feel. So maybe you'd like that more than Halo Infinite in that regard. But yeah, not super hyped. I do like the meme with the bad graphics. They showed one of the Covenant, I believe, and it looked like almost N64 quality a bit, but I don't know. I don't think it looks horrible, but it's not super interested unless it's on PC, maybe.
Well, somebody has made a point in the chat about Doom 2016 being phenomenal. I had that on, I've got that on Switch, and that is amazing. I absolutely love that game from start to finish. I was hooked, then I played it through a second time. Doom 2016, an absolute masterpiece of a game. I had that on Switch, and if it ever comes up in the Steam sale or something like that for £4, I might get the PC version as well to play it all through again on max graphics. I've not got Doom Eternal yet. I'm waiting for the Switch version. But a really, really good FPS, and this is the last thing I'll say about this, a really, really good FPS, or a game that's played from a first-person perspective, it's not actually a shooter, it's more of a first person adventure game, is the Metroid Prime series. Those three games, absolute masterpieces, and even better on the Wii, where you can play them with the pointer controls, and you can actually, which gives you the sort of precision you get from a mouse keyboard setup. So there's some good tips. And pretty
one of the main reasons I bought the Switch was to get Metroid Prime 4. Where is it?
Yeah, exactly. And they've been teasing, there's been all these leaks about a Metroid Prime trilogy HD remake, all redone. Where is that game? I want that game. Take my money. I need it in my life. I love those games. But there's some good gaming tips. Novi Honza gave $10. Thank you very much. He said, Mark, how is Patriotic Alternative doing, creating an ever-growing community? Do you coordinate with other European white positive organizations? Well, Patriotic Alternative is going really well. We've got Indigenous Peoples Day coming up. We've had loads and loads of new development, new regional organizers being appointed, regional activities taking place every weekend. So some weekends we have regional activities in multiple places in the South. We've had regional activities recently in the Southwest, the Southeast, London, the West Midlands, Yorkshire. Things are going really, really well, and they're going to get better and better. So onward and upward with that. And Sunday will be the next big round of events. So keep your, well, I say keep your eyes peeled. If you don't see what we're doing, you're going to be living in a burrow somewhere, because I tell you, it's going to be big, and so big that no one's going to be able to ignore this. Corey1995 gave another super chat, £3. Thank you very much. And he said, sad that people have had their lives ruined with the radius of the Beirut explosion, likely due to Israel. Saw that Netanyahu had mentioned the site in a UN speech. Yes, what happened? Well, I'm not sure if we're ever going to know what happened there, but I wouldn't put it past Israel. Israel is a major threat to world peace. It's a threat to stability in the Middle East. And I believe that was something to do with Israel. And I think the fact that Trump called it an attack may well have been a slip of the tongue. He may well have dropped his fellow whites in it there. Galileo's Tong gave £3. Thank you very much. And he said, being addicted to jogging is especially dangerous if you jog around construction sites looking for something to steal. Yes, indeed. Thank you for that. Got a cheeky little grin on my face there. Novi Honza gave another $5. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, I'm glad to see another white positive content creator in the Boomer. I've subbed to him and watched his live stream yesterday for the first time. Chatted with a good guy about gardening. Well, yes, please do sub to Chris, because his work is superb. And one thing that I'm really proud of in the last few episodes, we've had all sorts of different content creators. We've had Chris, who's into gaming. We had the White Art Collective. We have people who are involved in so many different facets of life. And we've had a guy actually emailing me saying he wants to get a PA Warhammer 40,000 group together for anyone who'd be interested in doing that. And I do think it's so important. I also speak to a couple of lovely women who are in PA, and they're into arts and crafts, and they get together now and do artistic stuff together. And I think it's so important that we as a group cover all these bases. So that is good news. We do have some questions, and we've got one from Adam. It's about the Beirut explosion. We've already sort of covered that. We've got one from Brit Viking 2. He says, hi, Mark, would you like to see some sort of nationalist gaming company, even if it's a bunch of nationalist gaming devs collaborating? I would love to see really good content, whether it be content about modern day life, whether it be content about historical occurrences, or whether it be fantasy content based in Norse mythology, or some kind of mythology that we would be interested in. You know, Greco or Roman mythology would be good too. But I would definitely support any nationalist company that wished to produce games that would either red-pilled our people or raise the spirits of our people. I mean, we briefly covered this, but you two, feel free to chime in on this one as well.
Yeah, I definitely want to see that. If anyone's making any sort of games like that, I will definitely check them out and show them on my channel. Like, I want more historical games that don't have anti-white narratives in them. I was really disappointed that Ubisoft decided to tackle the Viking thing, and they're going to make it totally anti-white. I know they will. So I'd like a Viking game, please. Isn't paused. Thank you.
Well, please share the whitewellbeing.net game that is just now being put together on your channel. That'd be fantastic. We really appreciate that and any suggestions you might have. But absolutely, I want to see, and I think what I spoke to earlier, don't be afraid of karaoke-ing the hell out of some game that's already out there. If you can get your hands on the code and you can change it enough so that you can't be sued, just grab it, just make it into something that will be fun for us, for God's sakes. They do that to us all the time. Do they hesitate to use firearms? Do they hesitate to use the internet? Do they hesitate to use all of this technology that Western kind has invented? No, they don't feel any shame with that whatsoever. Grab these things. The majority of them are invented by white men anyhow. The last thing I'll just say very quickly, a lot of people are saying about that Beirut explosion that it had to be a nuke because there was a mushroom cloud. When you all are considering this, any excessively energetic explosion is going to produce a mushroom cloud. So just keep that in mind as you're thinking about the Beirut explosion.
Thank you. Adam asked, in reference, Hearts of Iron 4 is the modern version of the Japanese World War II game Mark described. Well, I've not heard of Hearts of Iron 4. I will definitely check it out. And if I ever build a Super Famicom game collection, Barbarossa will be the first game I add to that collection. I was actually going to show the cover art for Barbarossa up on stream. But believe it or not, despite it being a mainstream product available in Japanese stores, it's probably actually too edgy to throw up on screen. And if I did throw it up on screen, it would at 1,000,000% be clipped out by disingenuous nitpickers who love to clip things out and make something out of nothing. And I don't want to turn this stream and Barbarossa and Super Nintendo games into Bookgate Part 2. So I'm gonna leave that one there. Beer Hall Pooch has a question for Chris, and he says, has Chris any ideas of how we can reach the gaming community directly with our message?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. Just we need to make our own gaming networks or something. I think, although having echo chambers is not always the best thing, we need to go into enemy territory and red pill people as well. Just keep giving out the facts. I don't know what else to do other than that.
Well, I think one of the things we can do as gamers is, I remember when I was really into multiplayer gaming as a kid. Multiplayer gaming meant sitting on a couch, passing the pad, playing rounds of Street Fighter 2. And then it quickly moved on to four-player Mario Kart, four-player GoldenEye, and four-player International Superstar Soccer. And those games were all absolutely fantastic. And I remember having some really, really good memories of playing those games with my friends when we sat in each other's bedrooms, you know, three or four of us all, you know, with pads. And when we got a bit older, you know, we'd have sleepovers and we'd sneak in a few beers. But now gaming is even more social. Gaming is constantly a social activity. I speak to people every week who are playing both here in Britain and all over the world. And very quickly, you can turn conversations political. Very quickly, you can just drop things into conversation. And I have spoken to people who are gamers, and very quickly, you can start getting a good sort of feel for what you can or can't drop into a conversation. And I've red pilled people by when I was playing games with them. I've also been in chats on YouTube videos where the video's nothing to do with politics. It's about something to do with movies. It's something to do with gaming. And I've said, oh, I think this about, and somebody says, oh, are you Mark Collett? Are you that guy? And I'm like, oh yeah, what do you think about this? And it is very easy to actually drop these things in. And if you're playing with a group of people regularly, it can be quite intense. You can form quite good bonds with these people. They can become real life friends and just talk. I say to people every week, the best way to build Patriotic Alternative and to build a resistance is just talking to people, is just having a chat.
Could I add something to this?
Yeah, go for it.
That's kind of what I want to keep doing on my live streams. People have told me, just give up gaming and do other things. But I feel like I'm reaching an audience now, and I can keep dropping these subtle hints to people and red-pilling them. So I'm going to keep doing game streams as long as YouTube doesn't ban me. So that's what I had to add.
Well, I agree. And I think that people who do use gaming as a social outlet, people who do talk about gaming and who play games with people regularly, just drop it in. Just drop it in. What's the worst that can happen? And if you're playing Fortnite and you're stood next to a guy who's laughing and joking, throwing tomatoes at a screen broadcasting politically correct garbage, you know, give him a few links. It's easy. You can do it. Spread the word however you can. And, you know, after this show, I'll be Googling the prices for a boxed copy of Barbarossa to add to my collection. But that brings us very close. Oh, we've got one last super chat from Blunderbuss. He gave $5 and says, wasn't the idea to distract and pacify the public with beer and football? Why would our enemies politicize and invade these spaces? Well, exactly. Exactly. Well, look, thank you. And we are coming to the close of the show, unfortunately. This 2 hours has flown past very, very quickly tonight, and it's been a very different show to usual. It's good to talk about new topics. But first and foremost, I'd just like to thank you, Chris. Thank you for joining us. Please give yourself a little outro. Tell us where we can find you and how we can contribute to your work. And also, if you ever are streaming a game of Warzone or PUBG or maybe even Fightcade, we could play a few rounds of Street Fighter 2. Please, please invite me on and let's do some gaming together, my friend.
Yeah, we're definitely going to figure something out. We'll find out which games we got we can play, and I will definitely be hyped for that. Yeah, just keep speaking the truth. That's what I would say. Speak out if you have the ability to. Don't be afraid. It's not that bad to get canceled. It's very liberating. And you can find me, I guess, Chris the 30-year-old boomer on YouTube for now. And the same name on DLive and BitChute. And then Decayed Chris at Twitter. So.
Well, again, thank you so much for joining us, and make sure you stay in touch. Thanks, because I would love to join you on some streams.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
I really would.
Yeah, we're
and we do have that. I was going to say, we do have a really talented young lad in PA. He's only 16. He's a real, he's really amazing at Call of Duty, Warzone. And we've got another lad, actually, who's also as good as him. We've got two great gamers. I'm not that good, but if you ever want to do a live stream, I will provide myself and two experts, and we can try to win. It's not called a chicken dinner. It's just called a Warzone victory. But we'll go for a Warzone victory. If you ever want to stream one, I can provide you with me and two other gamers. So have a think about
which,
that.
Mate. Which platform do you play it on?
It's multi-platform. So
you can play it.
Yeah. Like cross-platform? PC. Yeah, it's all cross-play.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that should be good. One more thing I want to say is people need to start lifting.
Yeah, they do. They do. They definitely do. But thank you for joining us. Jason, my friend, please tell us who's on tap and where we can find you and what you're going to be up to for the rest of the week.
Oh, it's most exciting. Tomorrow at noon Eastern Standard Time, we are going to have the Golden One himself, who is going to be in a video game, as we learned from Mark earlier. We're going to have him on the show. on tap. And Jared George and I are going to be speaking with him about all things that he is doing now and looking into the future to do, and probably about his young and budding family as well. So make sure you don't miss that. Otherwise, it has been magnificent serving Why Wellbeing with every single one of you in these days when we continue to grow and become increasingly powerful around the world. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you for being with us. A big thank you to everybody who is watching and participated and who will watch in replay. And I pass it back to our great leader, Mark Collett.
Well, thank you. Thank you to everyone who's here tonight. And don't forget, tomorrow night, Laura Towler is debating a guy called Ricky Doolan or Dolan. And he's a guy from British Lives Matter, but he thinks anybody can be British. Anyone can be British as long as they have a little passport and wave a small plastic flag. So that is going to be epic. And when I say epic, that is going to be as epic as watching a grown man get put over Laura's knee and spanked repeatedly can be. It is going to be superb. He is going to get made a fool of. And I am going to be there in the chat. Make sure you are too. So that just leaves me to say thank you to everyone who joined us tonight. Thank you to Chris. Thank you to No White Guilt. Do not forget, this weekend is Indigenous Peoples Day. It's White Lives Matter Day. Make sure you're out there with your banner. It's not too late to actually get in touch, to get doing something, to get signed up for this. Go to the Patriotic Alternative website. It's a major thing over there. Please help us make a political earthquake on Sunday. So thank you, Chris. Thank you, Jason. And thank you to everyone who donated so generously tonight. It is really touching to see how generous people have been. I will make sure that money will go to a very good cause. But as always, thank you so much to the audience. You guys have been out here in force again, nearly 1,600 people watching. Again, numbers that we struggled to achieve many nights on YouTube, so still doing very well here. But this is why we do it. You people, this community, you're the ones that really, really do boost my morale. It's so amazing to be part of this, and I thank you all for being here. Stay safe, love you all, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of PWR. Thank you.